between punk and hip hop that was kind of like, forget the rest of the, you know, music industry. Like, we're just kind of doing our own thing.
That's a real thing. That's a real thing. When we went to New York, when we did our first show in New York, we played at this place called Joker's Rocks. It's an old strip bar. They turned into quote unquote venue. And, you know, we did that show, and then we had a show the next day. It was a festival, basically. So that's the first time that I realized that, yeah, there's so much similarity. It was a bill with this group called Orange 9mm punk band, and then a few local hip-hop groups, and then some more punk, and all in the same room, sharing the space and performing together. And it blew my mind, because that same night, right upstairs, people left from downstairs to go to a Red Alert party where we met Kid Capri for the first time. It's like, wow, we were just walking out of the building and Capri was on his way in. I was like, what? I look up, there's a lineup going to a Red Alert party. But we had to bounce out the next that night, so we ended up going.
Oh, man. That hurts.
Yeah, so we were supposed to be on that bill, and the promoter was janky, and one of the people that we were staying with told us, yeah, just bun that and just leave. He's, you know, you guys are going to get screwed.
Mm-hmm.
So we bounced, but it got to see a couple of the, you know, performers, and to see that punk rock, hip hop blend together, you know?
Wow, man, what an experience. And a different time as well.
You know? Yeah, it is different.
You guys are hitting different audiences than you would normally hit.
Yeah. There's
probably a lot of audiences that respected what you guys were doing, and like you said, the energy. And
yeah, we did. And then, you know, the hip-hop shows all as well, like, you know, they were amazing experiences. Like, you know, hitting the road with KRS-One, you know, doing, you know, Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal circuit. It was an experience just to, you know, spend 3 days with the Blastmaster. And
what year was that?
94. I want to say 94. The year he came was Supernatural. Supernat and Mad Lion. Phenomenal.
So, I think I was too young to. So, would that be like right after Return of the Boom Bap?
Yeah.
Or the solo KRS-One album?
No, the one that Mad Lion's on, it's Return of the Boom Bap, right?
I think he's on the second one, the KRS-One self-titled album.
Okay,
but you know, it's all around, you know, because
yeah,
one's 93, the other one's 95, so. I'm just trying to.
I want to say 90. Probably 95.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm just curious.
You know, yeah. So. Well, what was cool about those times and doing shows is, like, you know, Ottawa, Toronto, Montreal. That was, you know, that was a circuit for us for most of the hip hop shows. It was small, but then, you know, punk shows, you know, 10 days, 21 days, Calgary Stampede, huge festivals.
Yeah, it's a different audience.
Yeah. But I loved going to Toronto. I love going to the Toronto shows, to do shows in Toronto, Ottawa shows. We play with, you know, a lot of shows over there. Nine Planets, shout out to Nine Planets Hip Hop, which is DL Incognito, who,
yeah,
you know, him and I recorded, you know, some music together. You know, we look forward to getting to Ottawa and running into the guys and, you know, doing our thing.
Yeah,
and that's, I don't know, that was a lot of motivation for us to get out again on the road. I mean, we were able to go, you know, to places where we wouldn't necessarily have been able to afford to go to at the time. Like, mm-hmm. you know, we played the Samuel L. Jackson tournament in Bermuda. We've been to France, you know, 2-3 times.
What kind of tournament?
It was a golf tournament. It's a golf tournament. So
how did that happen?
Through Patch again. His brother, his cousin at the time, was in charge of organizing it, and he lives out there. So he goes, need some bands. So Orion and I ended up going out there with a group called Bullfrog, which DJ Kid Koala was DJing for at the time. Our homegirl Desi DeLauro, who sings Mindstate, is the voice of Mindstate. Shout out to Desi. we got offered to go to Bermuda and rap. The crazy thing is, when we got to the hotel, it's a huge lounge. It's a golf tournament, but it didn't click that there's only celebrities. So the whole weekend was like, walk into the lounge, the cigar lounge that they have, and on the piano is Bernie Mac.
Bernie Mac's
just playing piano, chilling, hanging out. Like, you know, Samuel Jackson sitting in the corner just saying hi to everybody and vibing out. So that whole weekend, I met so many people. That was the year that The Great White Hope came out.
Okay.
Remember that movie?
Yeah, for sure. Damon Wayans?
Yeah.
Samuel Jackson was in it.
Yeah. And that's all they were running the whole time that the tournament was going on TV, hotel room, Great White Hope. Like, these guys, they milked it.
Yeah, they had a soundtrack. I might have that tape down there somewhere.
Yeah.
That's.
I met the $6 Million Man. It's from an action show from way back, the mm-hmm. Bionic Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy.
That's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. Makes me think of other like movie placements that you guys had. Like, I remember Choice had sent me what was the name of the Wesley Snipes movie?
Art of War,
exactly.
So yeah, we're still getting royalty checks from Art of War.
Crazy.
Like, they still come in. That's a little side note for artists out there. If you can get your music placed, don't let it just sit. Try and get your music placed, some sort of licensing, because that's your capital these days. You know what I mean? Jingles, whatever you can, if you can get your music placed, licensed properly, go for it, because you know checks will keep coming in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, crazy. So let's talk about the first Shades of Culture video.
Pain Rent.
Yeah.
Pain Rent.
It's black and white, right?
Yeah, black colorized. It's colorized, so it's black and white, and then they add like tints to, like, you see there's some bit of tint to it in some scenes. Yeah. Like the one where he falls down the stairs. Mm-hmm. It's like, so yeah, they colorized it. Some students from University of Toronto that we got, you know, linked up with, and it didn't really interested them. And what was dope about that, everything was lined up perfectly. We had a big show at the Spectrum at the time, so you see that in the footage. Mm-hmm. These guys were here to film that, and they had rented out a little studio for us to go, you know, film the indoor scenes at. The video was so much fun to do. We had to kind of make that snowboard jump. You see the snowboard jump in there? We kind of built that ourselves just at Murray Hill Park.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the guy filmed it. It was really, a really dope experience. It was fun. It was really eye-opening on an independent, you know, independent student budget. Yeah, they did well.
Yeah. It seemed like a fun...
It was.
A fun vibe.
Yeah, you see that guy that falls down the stairs and he plays the manager, the same guy that plays all the roles. He's a comedian from Toronto. Like, had us dying the whole time. We were laughing the whole time.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So how did that get any play? Like on
Pain Rent?
Yeah.
Yeah, it got a lot of play, actually. It got
on Much Music and Music Plus? Or
Music Plus.
Okay.
And then the thing is, the manager, production manager here, was always in contact with, you know, Much Music, so Moses Lemire. So we would be able to get it sent. So it didn't get a lot of play on Much Music, but it
got played.
Yeah, not as much. Yeah, it got played. Not as much as Mind State, but
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But we were pushing that, you know, on the radio and, you know, playing it at shows. And that was the advantage of doing, you know, performing a lot of shows. People hear the music. And they actually experience it when you're doing it live as well. And we're selling a lot of, you know, a lot of cassettes and merch and stuff like that. Like when we went across Canada with the Bad Brains, our merch was gone before we made it to Vancouver. So we had to get more shipped to us.
Okay.
By the time we got to Vancouver, it was sitting there. Shout out to G-Man Garrett.
So what were you selling? Like just the tapes, or you had?
We had tapes. We got T-shirts made.
Oh, nice.
That
nice.
Akira and our boy Shorty did the artwork on for us. And,
you still have them?
Yeah, we still have a couple. Okay. Yeah, we do. And there's the one that you saw in the They Wanted All video.
The Mind State T-shirt.
One. Yeah, I think I have a couple of those.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah, so I got you.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, man.
That's cool, man. That's cool. So after Paying Rent, from my memory, the next video after that would be Shine. But did you guys do anything in the meantime that didn't get released, or was that really just the next thing that came out?
After paying rent, we recorded some stuff that was unreleased, basically. Unreleased and never came out, but we can get that out of the archives, but,
mm-hmm.
We were just writing and we were so busy, like, touring and on the road that, we were still pushing the songs we had at the time in true, I guess, punk rock fashion, you know?
Yeah, man. So Shine.
Yeah.
Talk about the creation of that track, you know, bringing Mr. Len into the fold and.
Yeah. So,
DJ Choice on the beat.
Of course. DJ Choice on the beat. Len, Mr. Sosa, Len Sosa, was part of the Box Dynasty back in the day. So mm-hmm. DJ Blaster, Sekou Touré, Prowl, rest in peace. Sosa, they were all, you know, the Box Dynasty, part of the NDG's legacy when it comes to music as well,
mm-hmm.
You know, he was already working a bit with Chuck and Choice, and I already knew him. So we wanted to work together. So we ended up doing Shine, and he came up with the hook. Yeah, let's do this. And that was born right there and then, through, you know, just from us getting together. And then Sosa basically became, like you see on the back of the album, like he is Shades. He is Shades of Culture as well. You know, he became the other, then, you know, he's the last member to join Shades.
Okay, so he is.
Yeah, if you look on the back of...
You're saying like he's an unofficial member, like Busta Rhymes and A Tribe Called Quest? Or are you saying like he's actually...
Oh, no, he's Shades.
He's Shades.
He's Shades of Culture. There's no doubt. We were on the road together, plenty of shows.
I love seeing that clip back, and I talked to Storm about this. You know, it's that clip where I think you're maybe in Quebec City, or I don't know where, but I think it's Quebec City.
Oh, Festival de Quebec?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're doing Shine, and then, you know, you guys threw in the Beanie Man instrumental, and then Storm was telling me that was Jeremy Harding, a guy from Montreal.
From Montreal. Yeah.
And who I ended up finding out later, you know, it was like a deportation thing, and he had to leave Montreal, but then went to produce, you know, for Beanie Man.
Yeah, so, Sean Paul.
And then it's funny that you guys are performing over that track, and Mr. Lenz and that, you know, you guys doing that whole thing. I like that video, like the way you guys put that all together.
It was a magic moment. It was a magic moment. The footage helps a lot. It sells the magic, but yeah, it was. And we'd been jamming with Sosa, you know, leading up to that plenty of times. So we had enough practice to, you know, to pull it off. But yeah, when he went in, like into the crowd, yo, they were receptive.
Let's talk about the B side, doing Main Objective with Dave One.
Yeah.
And at the time, did you guys have a vision for, oh, we're going to put out a single and this is going to be this, or you guys were just creating some tracks and you're like, okay, let's put these two out together?
No, work. Wow. When you, yeah, working with...
Just chronologically, this is like a couple of years before Mind State, the album came out.
Yeah.
And those are both on Mind State. Yeah. So that's why I'm trying to like understand the timing of things with you guys. And
when we started working with Dave One and Choice, that was around the same time that Science, the record store, opened up, right? So, you know, we were all got familiar with each other. We knew each other really well, and Dave One was producing for Obscure Disorder at the time, but they were called Rubidoid. So it was Dave One, P Thug, who are in Chromeo. And then you had Obscure Disorder. There were three members at the time, and A-Track was the DJ for the whole thing. So they'd play live, and A-Track was DJing, and these guys would rap. It was amazing. Then, you know, they became Obscure Disorder afterwards. And we started working with Dave One, just through us knowing each other. And Dave One, when he has a specific thing in mind, he makes sure that it goes how he hears it in his head. So he's very meticulous when it comes to production. So it's quality over quantity for Dave One. That's why a lot of the stuff that he produced and produces is a gem. They're gems. Because he puts all his focus in it. And so you won't get, you know, 10 beats in 3 days from him. It's going to be specific sounding beats. Like, you know, we've heard the Obscure with a Nonfiction track.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds way different than what he did for Obscure Disorder before that. Mm-hmm. So it's always...
And it sounds different from what he did with you guys.
Exactly.
Too. Yeah.
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 So that was... He already... had something in mind for when we started working with.
Okay.
Yeah. Main objective, actually, it started as a live instrumental. So live band, and then it turned into what it ended up being afterwards. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. So that guitar is played.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Okay. So how did you guys decide to put that out as a single?
Oh, well, I guess
that was the first piece of Shades of Culture music on vinyl in the first place, right?
Yeah, so. Exactly. Well, science, I guess, had a lot to do with that, but us being, grew up with vinyl, we had to have it, right?
It was time, yeah.
Yeah. So, we did what we had to do to get that vinyl out. Yeah. Looking at it right now, man.
Yeah, man.
Beautiful. This was actually amazing, 'cause then when we did this vinyl, we ended up doing we got our test pressings with nothing written on them. We thought that was the coolest thing ever for vinyl collectors. Mm-hmm. And Storm and the other guys that DJ'd already, they already knew that it was, that's how it goes.
Yeah,
this is it. We got our vinyl. And for me, I started learning that, yeah.
And for them, they were getting artillery.
Yeah.
For the live shows.
Yeah.
It's like, now we can mix our own stuff. We can cut our own stuff. And
yeah. You can show up and bring your vinyls and have the DJ play it. If if he's down.
Yeah. That too. Yeah. And did you guys, was it following that you guys did the video for Shine? Or was it before that? Okay.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
After the record came out, you guys were like, okay, we got to do a video to push this.
Visuals, yeah.
Okay. And that's another, fun video. Looks like you might have had more fun in that one than even paying rent.
Yeah, we did. We did, because shout out to my boy Tactics, who works stuntman, works in the movie industry.
Mm-hmm.
And the other guys that, put that video together, they're all film industry dudes. So right away, all of us being, kung fu fans and, spy movie fans, we started, working out a plot to have that in there, Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of fun. Like, the people just showed up to support. It wasn't something, that was, paid for by ACTRA or anything like that. We had an independent director, producer, all the guys, and we had access to Groove Society,
mm-hmm.
the club. So it was perfect. We shot everything in there. We got to do some cool stunt things, like some cabling. And you see the guy gets kicked, Tactics kicks him, flies backwards. Like, that's a cable gag. So he gets pulled on the cables and looks like he's flying back. The decor, the people that were there, the energy was right. The energy was right.
Yeah, man. And
that was so much fun.
Yeah, what else do you remember from that shoot?
The people
in it, because it's a lot of little cameos here.
Yeah,
you
so
got DJ
we,
Choice on the side placing some
got,
bets.
Yeah, we
got Dave One in the crowd yelling.
We have offsides, so we had Arcade,
mm-hmm.
we had Malicious, we had Bailey, and my man Solo Key in there. Homie Ezra as well was in there. A lot of people, like you said, we even had Sterling Bounty, he was on the side. All of the TA crew were there. And yo, shout out to the TA crew. They've been a big support for everything Shades and a lot of the hip hop. Like, you know what I mean? It's because of TA that Under Pressure happens. And, you know, certain, you know, the graffiti based events, music based events, dance, it's all part of the culture. And, you know, again, that's another thing. That's a whole other story. Under Pressure, how they've you know, made their mark for over 25 years now, representing the hip hop culture. So,
yeah, man. And say we talked about the Shine video. In between time, I guess any act that was coming to Montreal, you guys were pretty much opening up for them.
Yeah, we had a good in for that. I mean, so many shows like that we've opened for, everything, you know, from Gangstar, Ice-T, Das FX, and then, you know, groups like House of Pain with Biohazard, which was, yeah, a hell of a show. You know, we've opened for reggae artists, blues artists, Ben Harper. We just never said no to shows, and especially when it's, you know, different genres of music.
Yeah.
It's get to experience it. Yeah.
To touch somebody else somebody who's never heard your music before.
Exactly. And get out of our comfort zone, but we were comfortable pretty much anywhere, so... Mm-hmm. It was easy to say yes.
Yeah, as far as Backstreet Boys even, right?
Yeah, it was holy 22,000 people, and yeah, just did it.
And that's funny because what people might not know, like, it's the funny history of the Backstreet Boys is that they kind of blew up in Quebec first before blowing up all around the world.
Yo, they wouldn't stop coming here.
And they would do a lot of shows here and sell out a lot of shows, and so it wasn't just like, you know, like a big artist comes to Montreal and they might do like two nights or whatever, but they were doing like 7, 8, 9 shows in the province in the span of a couple of weeks, right?
So in like, time, yeah.
And you guys were, I know you guys did that first, and then Dubmatique did that later.
Yeah.
So what was that like?
Well, we did the first, and then we did the New Year's gig with them. Like, mm-hmm. So we ended up playing the Montreal, Colisée du Québec, and Sherbrooke. Mm. Three different nights. It was crazy. We got used to it after the first one. Like, we knew what to say, what not to say, you know, what to do. You know, it's when you can't hear yourself because the crowd is screaming so loud, but they're with you, just keep it going. Because one band made the mistake of, you know, they were up there performing, they'd never been seen before, and they go, all right, second song in, they're like, you guys are here for Backstreet Boys, but, and as soon as they said Backstreet Boys, the whole crush, but we're going to do two more songs, okay? And I go, no, they opened the floodgates. They opened the floodgates. Nobody told you to say that, man. You know? Yep. Cut their own heads off.
Yeah, it's a rough time up there if it's not hip-hop, right? You can't be expecting people to just be happy with whatever you're going to...
You know? And it was Backstreet. Like, it's kids. Like, screaming kids. Like,
I didn't want to forget to... I heard about some technical difficulties one point. Like, some sort of DAT player might have got kicked over or disconnected during a Backstreet Boys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So
what happened there?
It got kicked over. I think it was tactics. And the guys that were doing the routine, it got kicked over somehow. And we had to figure out what to do, but good. Composure, kept cool, and got it back. But ever since that happened, we got the mini disc.
Okay.
We had the mini disc, and Orion was like, yeah, this is never happening again. It's like, Rev's like, no. It's something that's never going to do that again. And mm-hmm. we found a way, but, bro.
Yeah, because that's in a time where you have to physically bring your music to the shows.
Yeah.
You have to have everything and provide everything yourself.
Exactly.
And
and they ask you, what kind of wires do you want? And that's it.
Good times, man. Good times.
Yeah.
So then when I was talking to Storm, he was talking about, like, you guys are just doing so much touring that it came to a point where management was like, oh, you guys got to come out with a record. And that was kind of like how Mind State started to form.
Yeah.
The Mind State album. So let's talk about, like, the putting that album together. And
yeah, so, yeah, Mind State came about, like you said, because we've just been on the road so much and need to put out something. You know, singles were good, but album is a culmination of everything for us. So at the time, we transitioned from 2112 to Windmill Records, which was owned by Jonathan Pilewski and our manager, Fritz. So we even had a little spot where we were setting up. We had a stage to practice on. It was our own spot because the Purple Haze wasn't it anymore for us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's through Windmill Records we go in and discuss the album and, you know, figure what tracks do we have at the time that could go. But we were all about writing, you know, full album from beginning to end, but including, like, the hits that we have that the people know already, like, you know, Shine, Pain, Rent, they had to be on there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and by that time we had so many singles and everything.
Yeah, because you guys have the Pain Rent CD single.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So
yeah,
we had so much different music. It was a question of just putting it all together because it was already there.
Mm-hmm.
So but Mind State really was the song that, you know, that a lot of people still, you know, quote and sing to us when they see us. Hey, Mind State. Yeah. And yeah, yeah. Again, they had Desi DeLauro, you know.
Yeah, for me, that was the first time that I recognized NDG.
On, yeah,
like oh wow, this is where I grew up on the television screen. You know, it's like, yeah, this is, it's not like it's the news. It's a music video, and I'm like, wow, that's the park where I learned how to ride my bike, where I learned how to play baseball and hockey, and I'm like,
the depth that I shop at.
Yeah, all that, and I was like, this is nuts. You know, so that immediately, that was a pride thing for me, and then I was like, oh, this is good music too. It's not just whatever.
Yeah.
That track with you know, with Desi DeLauro on it, that was cool, man, because I had seen that name because I was watching Arthur.
And Baby A-Tracks in the video.
And A-Tracks there playing a young scientist.
Yeah.
Just walking around with a brain on the street, you know.
Premonition.
It's crazy, man. So and you guys really incorporated the elements, I feel, into the album, even into that video. Like, you see everything. It starts off with, you know, with the beatboxing before the track even starts.
That is a lot of the influence that came to me from just being part of the CBF crew, Cradle Burns Factory, and when we first met Orion. Mm-hmm. These guys were already doing that thing in a package encompassing all the elements, so you know, that was so much of a driving force for me and the music to incorporate it. Even though I don't do all of the styles or all the elements, I still want to have it, you know, as part of, you know, part of our, you know, our music and in our visuals, and we want to represent it whenever we out there.
Definitely, definitely.
And we snuck some skating in there too, you know?
Yeah, man. There's a, there's a lot in there. There's a lot in there. You guys even had NEG on the map. Like, you guys point to NEG on the map. And did you guys film that down on La Ronde at some points too? Like, with the Ferris wheels and...
No. That was brought... The carousel?
Yeah.
The carousel was in a warehouse. It rented.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, went to their carousel. And brought it in.
Where'd you guys put it?
In a big movie set, like a warehouse almost.
Okay, so you guys, and they lit up everything. That was all inside.
It was all inside.
Okay.
If you saw the place, you're like, it's a warehouse with a carousel in it. But, you know, once you light it up, you know, you can't tell.
Yeah.
Like, again, people it's thought like, we were at La Ronde. Yeah,
exactly. That's a,
movie magic, you know?
So there was, so there's the NDG scenes, there was the carousel scenes. Anything else you remember from that shoot that,
Well, yeah, I just remember that the amount of, views that it got. When it came out, like, Music Plus put us up to maximum rotations, and then, you know, we played a bit on Much Music, but something weird happened. Much MTV Espanol picked it up and started running it. We were looking at reports. Yo, you're playing.
And they got that MTV. From Much or something? Like, they picked it up from Much?
Yeah. Pretty sure they picked it up
Someone
from Much.
Someone was tuned in and on the satellite or whatever it was.
Because, a couple of friends of mine said, we saw you on MTV. What's going on?
Espanol.
Yeah, but it ended up just being on MTV afterwards. But they had seen it on...
So probably. It even got to MTV?
Yeah, apparently that's where they saw it. Because the guys that I know, the guys that were telling me that it was playing on Espanol, saying they were just watching it and it was part of a segment. But then it goes, you guys are playing all the time. So
crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
A lot of work put into the video, but yeah. It did what it did, and there you go. You know, the album, title of the album.
How did that, who titled that? How did you guys come up with that?
Well, I would, as like the video, right? It's like, it's about, you know, where we come from and where our mind's at, basically. Mm-hmm. So it's our state of mind, and... Where our, basically our minds are always at home, basically, all, you know, about our home, our environment, where we live, our community, our culture. So we call it, you know, the mind state, where the mind stays.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Cool. And who drew the cover, man? I always liked that cover.
It's the twins, Ollie and Mer Van Roost. They did some artwork for us in the past. Actually, they did the artwork on a couple of our older Shades T-shirts as well. And we hollered at them to do the artwork for us for this. And of course, always a pleasure to work with people that, you know, that know us already.
Yeah, and I like the vision they caught of the city.
Right? Yeah, the whole landscape.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, man. So, why did it only come out on CD and not vinyl and not...
Full vinyl album, you mean?
Yeah. How come it didn't come out on vinyl? How come it didn't come out on tape and it was just on CD?
We at the time, that's was a decision that we made. Like, we still wanted to put out vinyls and whatnot, but we weren't sure if we were gonna do a whole album or just, you know, more singles. So we ended up putting out like this, but like, you know, a little bit about us just came out on vinyl, so I wouldn't be mad to see, you know, the Shades album on vinyl.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
But yeah, it was just a decision thing.
Okay. Yeah, I was always curious about stuff like that. Like, same with like Rascal's first album, Really Living in 93. It was only on tape and CD. So I was like, when I talked to Kimo, I was like, why didn't that come out? So
yeah,
I always got to find out why certain things didn't.
Yeah, and at the time, it's man, it was just a decision like that.
It's a little bit more independent too, right?
The whole
thing. It wasn't like backed by a huge record company.
Exactly. No, it was our small label and a couple of our sponsors like Kango, Montreal, well, Quebec, and 2112 always stood in our corner. So yeah.
And the single for Mind State on vinyl, like, was that, did that come out after the CD or before?
Before the Mind State,
because it had Mind State, it had the Mind State remix,
remixed with Chuck Ice and the Island instrumental from, and
the part two produced by Similac.
Yeah, and we put an a cappella on there too. Yeah.
So, what was because then those tracks did not appear on the CD, right?
No.
So what was the decision of those two? Like, to, we're gonna have this here, like the placement of those things. How did that work out?
Well, what was cool about it, I found, is like we had the, you know, the Mind State album, clean version, like you said, the remix, and then on the other side, we wanted to give them something that they wouldn't be getting on the CD, so to speak. So yeah, we had Similac bang out. Shout out to Similac as well, another great producer of our city.
Definitely. Yeah, D-Shay's just looking at the record right now.
Wow.
I handed him the CD, the vinyl single.
Yeah, we put these stickers on all ourselves.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, we did them at the time.
There's still that sticker up at CKUT when you go in the room.
Yeah. And the D-Shade stickers on the singles, I did those with Dave 1 and A-Track over at the old Vice office.
Okay.
You know Vice?
Yeah.
Vice magazine when they were here. We did it over there at the time.
Crazy. So, because Do the Math, that was also on...
Yeah,
on the Shades.
Yeah.
So how did you go about putting that out as a D Shade single?
Well, Rev has a solo joint on here too, The Revolution.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We just wanted. Yeah.
Love that beat.
Yeah, the beat is dope.
Yeah.
And the song is dope.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, we wanted to have one joint. Each of us solo joints on there, just to show that it's not always all our voices always together.
Yeah, a little diversity within the album. Yeah.
To balance it out.
Yeah. So how did you decide to press that up? And because even because Full Contact, that's not on the.
No.
That's not on the soul. No, not on
so that was through Audio Research.
Yeah.
So when...
And that was... who owned Audio Research? That was Dave 1?
Yeah, Dave 1. Dave 1 was the owner, and, you know, A-Track was closely linked.
Yeah.
The brothers. Yeah, exactly. Obscure, the Maklovitches. Obscure Disorder was on their label as well. At the time, so they Dave One came at me and suggested that I do a, try doing a single for, you know, for the label. And I'm like, yeah, that'd be cool. And it actually got picked up by Fat Beats.
Mm.
And Babu was pushing it, like, hard. When he came out here, met him, and he went back and, you know, sold, you know, a few thousand copies at the time. And I wanted more, you know, but the label had a different direction in mind, more working with the DJs at that time, and like Craze and A-Track getting on the map and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So that was their direction. No bad. It's, you know.
Yeah, a lot of Audio Research releases were mostly like DJs oriented. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, me and Obscure Disorder, I had to find, you know, other ways to put out music and do our thing.
Yeah, that was a good one, though. That was a good one.
Yeah, it was a good experience. And again, like, shout out to Choice and, you know, and Dave One and Similac. You know, fun times. And again, all of us, you could find us, you know, at any given day at the Science Record Shop. Where, you know, at the time it was the place to get your up-to-date vinyls and, mm-hmm. you know, the hottest records you want, you know, at the time.
Yeah, man. And that kind of birthed the spot for Moog, because Moog moved in the back, right?
Yeah, they were in the same room, yeah.
And then as time went on, now you have Moog in Montreal, Moog in Toronto.
Oh, Kano, yeah. And, Kano beasting, man. Yeah. Kano's been beasting, man. And that's where I got my MPC, my first MPC, from Kano over there.
Which one?
MPC 2000.
Oh, MPC 2000.
Yeah, and the SP-12, I borrowed it. But yeah, then the 2000, I got it at the time when I didn't have the 8-outs in the back.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had the big cables, but it worked, No. Banged out a couple of things. I just for like sure. having it. It's like a puzzle for me, like making, you know,
yeah,
watching people make beats and trying to make them. It's like,
what could fit with what?
And yeah.
Yeah. Oh, 2000 is a good machine, man. It always sounded good.
Yeah.
What year did you get that around?
Actually, when just after Science opened.
Okay.
Yeah, just after they opened Science. Maybe a few months later. Yeah.
Nice. So that's making me think, you know, talking about Science and Moog and all that's making me think of when the Source came through to Montreal.
Yeah.
And
Eric Arnold.
Choice told me that you had spent a lot of time with the guy from
Eric Source Arnold, well, man. You know? Yeah. The Source came to Montreal. I spent a lot of time. The guy came to check us. He, you know, he checked Arcade. He checked Dubmatic. He mentioned Chuck Ice, OPP. Like, we, whatever he didn't have, we gave it to him anyways. Yeah. And then we went out.
He filled all the gaps
that
he wanted to write about, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we brought him to a couple of clubs at the time. It was 50s and Checkers was still open at the time, so yeah, we brought him out, but it was such a, you know, an honor to get, you know, to get coverage in the Source,
yeah,
for us, and being recognized as a city that has that culture here.
Yeah, because this is, you know, that's Mace on the cover in 1999.
Yeah. Mace with the tiger eyes.
And so, yeah, to. That's that, and even the graffiti artists were getting mentioned.
Yeah.
In there as well.
That's right. You
know, everybody was getting mentioned in there, so
it covered the whole culture. Yeah. Yeah. B-boy and everything. Yeah, bro. It was good day. Hey, we brought him to DG Park, NDG Park.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. We brought him to NDG Park. That's where he ended up meeting us.
That's cool, man. That's cool. So a bit of time passed from Mind State to the D Shade, Do the Math, Full Contact, and then you had the CD single for Do It Yourself and Unbreakable.
Yeah.
And so what was going on at that time for Shades and you know, that release, like what was happening with that?
At the time we were working on trying to work on some new Shades joints and working with some new, you know, different producers. Grand Theft being one of them, who produced Unbreakable, part of Team Canada A, you know what I mean? So it was an honor, and I'd already been working with Grand Theft with another project called Groundworks with Blue Rum 13, Lisa Marie Mackey, and Callie from Callie and Dub, and another guy called Mike Baker from Toronto, all orchestrated by Grand Theft, produced by Grand Theft. So we were doing that at the time. So I said, yeah, guys, let's go check, you know, this guy I'm working with. And sure enough, we went there, and, you know, he gave us Unbreakable, and we started with that, and then, you know, we put the other two tracks out, and we wanted to put something out at the time. We just felt like, you know, it's enough time waiting around. Just put another thing out. Mm-hmm. So we did it all ourselves, like it says. That's why we called it DIY.
Yeah.
And, you know, all pushed by ourselves. And that was the next project to come out after.
Mm-hmm. And that was like one of the last Shades releases, like, you know, in that span of,
yeah,
you know, let's say the 92 to 2002.
Yeah,
because after that you guys only did just a couple of tracks, right? Unless there's a bunch of stuff that's not like,
well, he gave release. Yeah, well, we did the Grindstone, the track with Sadat X.
Mm-hmm.
You got all those, right?
Yeah. But like, there was, I'm just saying, like, in terms of like Shades out, like, there hasn't been albums or EPs, you know. It's just like there's been like kind of loose,
yeah,
not to say it like that, but like loose tracks here and there.
No,
but,
yeah, exactly.
So what was, because I know it's also a different time in hip hop, 2002, you know. It's not, we're not talking about the same momentum, even for, you know, the whole industry was changing at that time. So did that have an effect on you guys putting music out? Or was it just a different time for Shades of Culture?
It was just a different time in each of our lives at the time. Still growing, always, you know, always attached to the music and culture somehow. But it wasn't a real production time, so to speak, for making an album. We were just trying to, you know, live our lives, mm-hmm, for a moment. And then, you know, see from there. But, yeah, it was a little bit of a lull, but we never, you know, fell out of love with the music or anything like that.
And you guys didn't tour as much in those times, right?
No, we did.
So I would still see you guys at local shows, hosting.
Local shows, I think one of the last tours.
Like kind of like opening and hosting at the same time.
Yeah.
I would see that a lot with you and Rev,
like, yeah,
in the early to mid 2000 era.
Yeah, exactly. And I was doing a few solo shows, every once in a while, and, you know, Shades every once in a while. Like you said, we'd be hosting a lot, so, you know, at least our presence is there.
All the Way Live Radio, CKUT 90.3 FM. Hope you enjoyed part one of D Shades' interview. A lot of history there, man. I really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed that convo. So I'm going to continue that next week. Tune in for the part two. And yeah, on a side note, I will be DJing tonight from 8 to 1 at Sans Soleil. That is the basement of Fleur Ricardo in Chinatown. So that's 1002 St. Urban, right next to Place d'Armes Metro. 1002 St. Urban from 8 to 1 tonight, Sans Soleil. I'll be there playing some records. Come through. And yeah, man, like I said before, big thanks to D Shade, Shades of Culture History. We're gonna finish off with a little bit of Shades music, a little Mind State. And I just want to take a second to give a shout out to Montreal Loves Hip Hop. They've been doing a hip hop exhibit since last Friday from the 27th of May till the 3rd of July. So you can check that out in Lachine every weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And that's 2901 St. Joseph in Lachine at the Entrepôt de Lachine. So go check that out. Montreal Loves Hip Hop. Whole bunch of hip hop stuff. Whole bunch of tapes, whole bunch of boom boxes, whole bunch of VHS tapes, DVDs, all kinds of stuff, man. Records, art, all kinds of stuff. Go check that out. Like I said, 2901 St. Joseph in Lachine, or check them out on Montreal Loves Hip Hop on Instagram. Enjoy the rest of the show. All the Way Live Radio, CKUT 90.3 FM. Peace.
To keep the ship from sinking, family Lincoln's more precious than golden Lincolns. Some make material objects to focus on their quest. While I search for knowledge, third eye will never rest. I bless the mic with niceness and flex the mental like biceps. Y'all will collapse from stress if you're not taking the right steps. Ensure your position in this hip-hop mission. And Jano, it's hard to realize what we envision. Put total dedication into my occupation. With total concentration, I will wreck any location and captivate the masses with the rhymes that I generate and move like contraband over the borders of your mind state.
Mind state.
Depths of the mind state to fathoms you can't fathom. Foes and friends get the bends. Nitrogen and rich blood creating hallucinating. Check the dread, he's got it in his head.
I got lots on my mind, thoughts shine like diamond mines. About the brothers with the nines and how I'ma make a dime. I'm not trying to see lockdown in this worldwide Alcatraz, but with every step you take, problems still follow that ass.
Complex shit gets figured out like trigonometry. Politics is like instant lobotomy. It's all in your own mind, check your bookshelf. It's full of knowledge, your knowledge is true wealth.
This goes out to all the people struggling. Me and my crew be huddling and making sure that we ain't stumbling. Without your footedness, you get lost in the abyss. That's why my mind state will always be at its sharpest.
Mind state.
Make you sweet, I mean sweat, just like Chris Spire. I sit back and read Alan Poe. A whole bunch of MCs still talk how to cap a hoe. It's all on apropos. Inappropriate to create shit while the corporates annihilate. I wake late with the cold sweats. Throw on the etnies and the blues at the Puma sweats. I wanna beat the happenings in my burrow. I wipe my furrow and walk over to the window. Then I evaporate like methanol inside my central mental mind state. Sharp to penetrate your left ventricle like Cupid's arrows to sparrows. You're in trouble without humble. You can't focus upon shades of culture's bone marrows. Now you're gasping spasms and then chasms. Open up to expose your final place of hip hop.
There's a lot going on in the world today. See how it affects Montreal's Black and Caribbean community. Read the Community Contact. News, features, opinions, music reviews, cultural events, and so much more. Our voices, our perspectives, Our Community. Published every 2 weeks, pick it up at your favorite community spot or visit us online at our new and dynamic website, mtlcommunitycontact.com. Easy to navigate and lots to enjoy. Archived issues also on the site and available on the web. That's mtlcommunitycontact.com. Stay in contact.
Are you ready? Are you ready for the sound experience of a lifetime? Are you ready for crystal clarity in sonic bliss? Are you ready for CKUT? We're ready for you. 90.3 on your FM dial.
There is this thing. Do you realize
what is?
There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing.
On.
There is this thing going on.
What
do you realize?
Our consciousness is affected.
There is this thing going on.
What is called?
The news brought to you live.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Off the Hour, right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. We are one day into the month of June. We are broadcasting from unceded Mohawk and Anishinaabe territory. You are tuned into The Avalanche, a special presentation of CKUT's spoken word department. The Avalanche seeks to cover issues affecting those with disabilities. I'm your host, Zoe. On today's show, an episode of the Financial Confessions podcast with disability activist Imani Barbarin. All that on CKUT.